Hey, this is Elizabeth McQueen, the host of This Song, and if you like conversations like the ones we have on this show, then you should check out The Write-Up. It's a podcast produced by our sister station, KUT, and it's hosted by Owen Edgerton, and in each episode, he talks to writers about, like, creativity and inspiration and artistic process. All the good things. You can find it on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you get your podcasts. Right on. Let's get started with the show. Hello and welcome to This Song, the podcast where artists talk about the songs that changed their lives, and then we get to the good stuff, inspiration, creativity, and artistic process. This week, we'll first be hearing from three of the members of the Austin group, The Octopus Project. We'll hear from Josh Lambert, Yvonne Lambert, and Tota Miranda. And then we'll hear from British singer-songwriter Jane Weaver. So, let's get started with Octopus Project. Like I said, they're based here in Austin, Texas, which is like where we make this podcast. So they're a hometown band. And they play, like they call it Indietronica. It's indie and electronica. They take synthesizers and live drums and a theremin and guitars and loops and put them all together to make music that's like experimental yet catchy and makes you just want to move your body. And then they have this stage show and they've got lights and projections and, you know, you can probably tell I'm a fan. In fact, they have a lot of fans here at KUTX, the radio station where we make this podcast. They came into Studio 1A back in March, and afterwards they sat down with me to go through the different musical moments that made them do what they do. You'll hear from Josh first, then Yvonne, then Toto. So here they are, Octopus Project.
The record that I would say changed my life was Appetite for Destruction by Guns N' Roses. Welcome to the jungle. We got fun and games. We got everything you want. How do we know the names? We are the people that can find whatever you may need. If you got the money, honey, we got your disease. In the jungle. Welcome to the jungle. Which I think came out in, like, I was 10 or 11 or 12 or something, and hadn't really heard much rock music, or just wasn't into it. And then when I heard that record, I was like, whoa, you know, this is what I want to do. You know where you are.
What were you listening to before then? Like, was it just like top 40 stuff?
Yeah,
or
just whatever was on the radio, or like, you know, Lionel Richie and stuff. What is happening here? Something's going on that's not quite clear. Somebody turn on the lights. We're gonna have a party. It's starting tonight. Oh, what a feeling. Dancing on the ceiling. So, were you playing music at the time? I was playing trumpet. Does that count? Is that music?
Trumpet is music for sure. For all you trumpet players out there, it's most definitely music. But so you were kind of playing music, but you weren't really listening to and or playing rock music.
Yeah, no, not really.
And so then did you start playing guitar after?
Yeah, immediately.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I haven't looked back.
Did you learn that record? Like, was that one of the first things you did?
Yeah. I knew most of the songs on it, I think.
So what was it about Guns N' Roses? I mean, as opposed to Lionel Richie or Michael Jackson?
I don't know. I just like the way it sounded, I think. I just really liked the guitar sound. Or just like, it was just like rough.
Was it like the heaviness of it?
Or maybe even just more just the crispiness of the crunchiness of it. Uh-huh. I don't know.
Really?
Like not in a rock way. I don't know how to explain it. Just the actual physical sound of it. She's got a smile that it seems to me reminds me
mean, I get the thing about Guns N' Roses is it's rock music, but it's very heavily produced.
Yeah.
Very structured rock music. And it has very crisp production.
Yeah, totally.
So when you started to make your own music, was that something you tried to do? Was it like, I want to do rock, but I want it to be very...
No, I think maybe by the time we started this band, I hadn't listened to them in a long time. And probably weren't on my radar as far as like influence.
Was this the first band that you were in?
No. We were all in a bunch of high school bands.
Did your high school band play Guns N' Roses?
Nope. Really? But this band actually did.
We did. We did the first, like, the intro to Paradise City. I swapped it out as the intro for one of our songs.
Yeah.
And nobody got it. Nobody understood.
Like 3 or 4 months ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it didn't really work
Lauren
out very
brought
well.
Brought a whistle from home. Dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee.
Wee! It was hilarious for us.
Yeah.
Was the audience just sitting there going...
Yeah. I think the audience was kind of going like that the entire show.
We were fairly out of context for the whole thing, so we could kind of get away with anything we wanted.
Was Guns N' Roses the thing that made you want to like play rock music then?
Yeah,
that's
totally.
The thing that changed, like...
Yeah.
I just want to play rock music.
Yeah.
Enough of this trumpet.
Yeah. I kind of gave up on the trumpet when I heard that record, I think. As an instrument.
You're sitting in your bedroom listening to it, like you have the record in one hand and the trumpet in the other hand. And you throw the trumpet in the garbage. Start giving yourself a tattoo.
With the shards of the trumpet.
As far as a song that influenced me, I don't remember when the movie 2001 A Space Odyssey came out, but... my parents had the record. And before that as a child growing up, I was very drawn to classical music, big movements and feeling the feelings that go along with that. But I think the 2001 theme song was the first crazy dissonance I'd ever heard, and it scared me. And I think that was maybe my first experience of having a song like just actually frightened me. I mean, it made me cry when I was
Would you like put it on so that you would cry?
Well, that's an interesting question. My dad thought it was really funny. He would put it on so I would cry. This sounds just terrible. I don't know. When I was little, that was kind of a thing that would happen sometimes.
And then when you got older, did you appreciate the ability of the 2001? Like, were you like, oh, that song can make me feel this thing?
Terror.
Terror.
And then as far as making myself cry, mm-hmm. My grandma gave me a tiny little organ that I played with when I was little, and just teaching myself how to play different songs. And I do remember playing that organ and trying to play like the saddest thing that I could play to see if I, just to try to make myself cry. And It was just fun little experiments I did by myself.
Did it work? Like, were you able? Did you play the right, like,
yes,
the right combination of,
yes,
chords? Where you were like,
yes,
oh, oh, wow.
No, I do. I have a memory of my mom walking in on me in my room with my organ, crying.
What are you doing? Nothing.
Well, to me, that's really great because I think, like, a lot of kids, when they hear classical music, what they hear is like boring classical music. It has no words, like, or I mean, I think it took. It personally took me a long time to like realize that, you know, what I was turning to music for was like an emotional response,
yeah,
and like actively seeking out different things and, mm-hmm, understanding that. But it seems like you were pretty tuned into that pretty young,
yes,
which is awesome. And then you joined a band and you guys started making instrumental music, which I think still is like a bridge for some people to get to an emotional place with instrumental music because, mm-hmm, there are no lyrics, mm-hmm, telling you how to feel. You have to actually give
feel
yourself over to feeling. Was that kind of when you started a band? Were you like, I want to be in an instrumental band?
I was like 5, I think, at this time.
Yeah.
I grew up playing piano and keyboards, but it was always a very private, personal thing. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until Toto and Josh were in a high school band together and they needed a keyboard player. Their keyboard player had quit and I agreed to fill in. It was just going to be a fill-in job, but then they stopped looking for somebody else. So I just ended up playing keyboards with them.
Wait a second. You guys have been playing together since high school?
Yeah, I met Josh and I realized that Josh knew Toto and it just, I really feel like because I loved and trusted Toto so much, it said a lot for Josh as a person. I feel like, oh, he must be a really good guy because he's Toto's friend.
I have pretty high standards.
Wow. And then so you just, but it all, you just kind of fell into the band and then it was just like,
and then
it just
kept going. Right. Yeah.
You guys have a long musical history.
Yep.
Together.
Yeah.
And a long history just in, like, personal history. I actually did not know that you guys had been playing together that long.
Yeah.
So what about you, Toto? What about a song or something for you?
I'm going to say Seeing the Jesus Lizard in 1993 or possibly 4. One of the first like serious rock and roll shows that I had been to. Mm-hmm. I think I'd definitely seen Megadeth and Weird Al previous to that, both of which were fantastic in their own kind of showbiz way.
I hope they
separate shows,
at Cobell. Yeah,
separate,
okay,
concerts.
But it was the Jesus Lizard. Was that a song that a show that you actively wanted to go to?
Yeah. I had just started to figure out that there was more to music than, say, Megadeth, and had started like looking around for like, well, okay, what are people into that I've probably never heard of? Everybody says this band is great, and so I got their cassette and was super into it, and then got to see him on that tour, and it was such a physical thing, and like. Yeah, just the way, yeah, visceral, and like they're playing with their whole bodies and the room just exploding. And as much as like high school bands was a chance to kind of, you know, get up and be goofy on stage and like curse in the microphone and stuff. This was the first time I'd seen like people doing it with such focus and intensity.
And then were you like, and that I want to do that?
Yeah, definitely. Drumming specifically. I think Mac McNeely is still the most inspirational thing, having seen him play.
I mean, because I've seen you drum. You've like put your entire, because drumming is such a physical full body thing anyway. I mean, all playing any instrument is, but drumming more than others, and you have to use all four limbs at the same time, and I don't know how anyone does it.
Yeah. I just have to stop thinking about it.
And then when you do, it all falls apart.
Well, did you go home and start trying to do it and try to like figure out how to get yourself to that place, or did you go like tell your friends like, we gotta get up on stage and we've
no,
gotta, like,
no, but that's where I feel like I sort of ended up. I don't think it was that conscious. Mm-hmm. But yeah, and that was also the start of seeing like a bunch of bands where there was, I feel like it was a more common thing back then for people to do it just like 120% on stage.
Like the 90s.
Yeah. but both the crowd and the audience, there was just more physical energy in the room at a show.
Yeah, I guess I hadn't thought of that. Like, that was a thing.
Yeah, to be excited.
Yeah. There wasn't a lot of like standing around with your arms crossed, nodding. There was like full body into it stuff going on. Or was it just because we were younger?
I think there's a much chiller vibe in general. I don't think music is any better or worse, but I feel like physical performance and like, I don't know, performance is the wrong word, but that kind of...
physical commitment?
Yeah, maybe. I think people are just not, that's not as much of an idea at the moment as it was when I was coming up and figuring out what things were all about. And I'm grateful for having been there then, because it's a lot of fun to do and to think of things in that way.
Is it still something like, do you prefer live performance to recording still?
Or it depends on the music. It totally depends on. There's some stuff that like types of music that I only want to see live, and some types that I only want to listen to records of.
Yeah,
and they're pretty different.
What about in the Octopus Project? I mean, you guys have a pretty intense recording process, mm-hmm. but then you also have a pretty intense live show. So how do you kind of, I don't know, reconcile the two? Like,
I think that's what the differences are. What keep each one interesting, the chance in the recording to really drill down onto the tiniest details and really just nudge everything into place and work on the recording as a composition, you know, bit by bit.
Or recording a song and then playing it live, it's two completely different things.
I feel like we usually write and record the song roughly at the same time and then figure out how to play it live, and it will change drastically.
It evolves. Even before you've played the first show, it's kind of become a new thing. Mm-hmm.
And then sometimes we'll go back and re-record it. We're like, wow, it's way better now.
I like what we're doing up here better.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or like, you know, add parts, like add drums to a song that didn't have them or whatever.
You get a different perspective on it when you have to make it work in a room.
Have you guys been playing together long enough where you can all look at each other and go like, yeah, we need to go back? Like, where everyone kind of knows when it's right and knows when it's working and knows.
Yeah, I mean, we have to talk about it, but more often than not, we're on the same page.
Yeah.
Well, thank you guys so much for sitting down with me.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Totally. Is Whitby by Octopus Project. And like, if you've heard this show before, then you probably know I'm a huge fan, like a gigantic fan of the full band interview. And if this is your first time listening, well, I love full band interviews. Like, I love the insight it gives you into the band as a whole. I feel like I understand the energy, the emotion, and the physicality of Octopus Project better now than I did before. Plus, like, I understand why all these people pool their resources and make music together, because they're deeply connected and they have fun together. And it's really rare to find people who you can connect with and have fun with and create with. So when you find those people, like, that's when true bands are formed. If you liked the insight you got into Octopus Project and you know, if like stories like the ones Josh and Yvonne and Toto just told are your thing, then please head on over to iTunes and become a This Song subscriber. And while you're there, we'd love it if you would leave a rating or a review for This Song, because ratings help us in lots of ways. First off, seriously, I'm not going to lie, they make everyone on the This Song team feel really good. And they help other people find us in the vast landscape of iTunes, which is really the point. Like, we want as many people as possible to hear these stories of creative transformation. And there are like lots of stories. We just put up all 53 episodes. For real, this is the 53rd episode, up on iTunes. And you can hear people like Mark Mothersbaugh from Devo and Leon Bridges and Kevin Parker from Tame Impala talk about the music that transformed the very way that they make art. Like, you can totally let yourself fall down a deep hole of musical goodness. Okay, now, on to Jane Weaver. Jane is a singer-songwriter from the UK who plays music that uses synthesizers and layering to create like sounds that are melodic and ethereal and experimental all at the same time. We've been digging on her song, I Need a Connection, at KUTX. It's from her 2015 record, The Silver Globe. And she was in Austin for South by Southwest this year. South by Southwest, of course, is the massive music and film and interactive festival that takes over Austin every March. And Jane met me down at the convention center, which is like the hub of everything, to talk about a song and an artist that still inform the music she's making today. So here she is, Jane Weaver.
So the song that changed my life really is Wuthering Heights by Kate Bush. I saw her on TV doing Wuthering Heights. That was the turning point. I was only, you know, probably five or six. I decided that I wanted to be a musician, and I was in awe of her. I've never seen anybody like her at all.
Did you say you were five or six?
Yeah. Honestly, it's that clear. It's such an imprinted memory, you know. It was such a strong thing because she was so unique, and you know, there was a lot of rock music and pop music at the time. There was a lot of glam, and when I was really young, I was really into music because it was on the TV. There was a show called Top of the Pops in the UK, and so even at that age, you know, I was getting into music and wanting to play keyboards and stuff. But she was. Her voice, her vision, her dancing, her mind, you know, that was, and the fact that she would sing in such a falsetto, operatic way, just made me want to be a singer. Out on the windy, windy moors, we'd roll and fall in green. You had a temper like my jealousy, too hard to grieve.
Can you describe that first time seeing her when you were a kid?
So yeah, so Top of the Pops, I think she was miming actually. So she, I think she probably had a leotard on and some, maybe a long dress and footless tights and barefoot. And she has this specific dance. If you ever look at you should look at the video for Wuthering Heights. She does this, you know, specific choreography thing to it. So she was doing this on Top of the Pops while she was singing as well. So it was just, and I think it was kind of, in my memory, it was kind of soft focus. A lot of her stuff was, her hair was all like, you know, brownie red and sort of wavy. And it was that kind of Bieber-esque, you know, that Art Nouveau kind of 70s look, which people still do now, still go for now, but it's more expensive, like Chloe. So yeah, it was, you know, it was just the whole package.
Did you go out and start to play music then? I mean, you were very young, like 5 or 6 years old.
Well, the Kick Inside was the first, which was the album which featured Wuthering Heights and I think The Man with the Child in His Eyes. And that was the first record I asked for and got for Christmas off my parents, but I had it on cassette tape and I've still got it. So it will have been, I think, 77 or 78, yeah. So I was very young, but it was, you know, it's one of my prized possessions still. I got a keyboard a few years later, like a Bon Tempi, those Italian little organs. What I would do is like stand in front of the TV whenever music came on. So at the time, there's things like Gary Numan, Our Friends Electric. Like orchestral Moves in the Dark, you know, a lot of electronic kind of stuff as well. I used to stand there in front of the TV trying to play along within that, because there's no video recorders, trying to play along within that short space of time. So I was always interested in music anyway, and singing, but I was a very shy child, so I would never openly discuss this with my parents. It was like this like secret thing that I was, this secret plan that was like, right, okay, when I get bigger, I'm going to be a singer. Always stay with me. It's my thing. Whenever I do a record, I it's my go back to record. You know, the Kick Inside, because it's got even though that album was done, she was very young. She was discovered by Dave Gilmour. She went into a studio with a lot of session musicians, and I think it's the one record where she feels that she wasn't really in control of. She had to argue for Wuthering Heights to be the first single because they wanted it to be The Man with the Child in His Eyes. I hear him before I go to sleep and focus on the day that's been. I realize he's there when I turn the light off and turn over. Nobody knows. And so after that, I think that she became more sort of independent in her production and stuff like that. But I still love that first record because it's, I don't know, it does sound like professional library musicians, but it sounds progressive, you know, it's quite perfect really. But I don't mind that it's not trashy or messy. I think it's kind of perfect to me.
And so what kind of aesthetic did you try to go for with this record that you've done? Do you like to keep things together and kind of like perfect, or do you like a bit of messiness, or?
Well, I think that, I mean, I'm still doing that sort of progressive layering. You know, there's still a lot there. There's still a lot of, I think like on the Kicking Side, there's a lot of seagulls and like, you know, Wuthering Heights, there's a lot of ethereal things. So it all influences everything you're doing. You know, a lot of reverb on stuff. Like soundtrack noises, stuff like that. So yeah, it still carries with me. It's my go-to thing, you know, always.
It sounds like it's the first time you fell in love with music.
Yeah, definitely. definitely. You know, and when I think of it as well, I get that kind of warm feeling. But that's what it should be. When you fall for your first record or first album, or, you know, the love you feel for it, it's genuine, you know. And it doesn't matter. That's what I'm saying. I'm not a snob about music. I wouldn't even care that it's, you know, so many people think Kate Bush is cool and she's, you know, mysterious and unique. And I don't even care for all that. Even if she wasn't like that, I just wouldn't care, you know.
You just love the songs.
Yeah. Yeah.
By Jane Weaver, and you can see why we dig on it. It's good. And, like, I had heard Kate Bush before, but, like, when I think of Kate Bush, I think of Running Up That Hill. That's, like, my main reference. But I searched out Kate Bush performing Wuthering Heights on Top of the Pops, and then, like, I watched the actual music video, and there is this dance that she does, and, I mean, now that I've seen it, I understand. I understand the impact that not just the song, but like the whole experience of seeing her perform that song would have had on a very young Jane Weaver. Like, it's not exactly like pop music. It's like performance art packaged as pop music, which is way cooler. And, like, in fact, I'm getting a little obsessed. Like, I'm gonna learn that dance that she does, and I've been singing in like a Kate Bush Wuthering Heights style lately. Like, seriously, like, you should see Kate Bush perform Wuthering Heights. I'll put links to videos of her singing the song on Top of the Pops and doing that dance, and like, maybe you'll want to learn the moves and see what your voice sounds like in high falsetto, and then we can get together and I'll do our like Kate Bush thing. Or even if you don't fall off the edge a little like me, like, I'm pretty sure you'll be impacted positively if you see Kate Bush. I'll also put the Octopus Project Studio NA session on the page for this episode, and I will put a Spotify playlist there too, so you can hear all the songs in this episode all the way through. You have come to the end of another episode of This Song. This Song is a production of KUTX 98.9 in Austin, Texas. This episode was produced and edited by David Sanger and me, Elizabeth McQueen. Cliff Hargrove recorded the interview with Octopus Project, and I recorded the interview with Jane Weaver. Taylor Wallace curates our Instagram account, and she's been making these really cool Flipgram videos lately. You should totally check it out. William Maxwell is our excellent intern, and yes, it's true. Our theme song is Mahout by Austin's own Hard Proof. They have a new live record out on Jim Eno's Public Hi-Fi label, just so you know. You can follow us on Twitter, Instagram, or Snapchat. Our handle is @thissongKUTX. You can follow us on Facebook, and you can subscribe to This Song along with the other KUTX podcasts, Austin Music Minute, Liner Notes, and Song of the Day on iTunes. Right on. Thanks for listening. Talk to you next time.